Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Avington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the War Report. This week, we're going to do part two, a continuation of last week's show. And by the way, Brian is back as guest on the show again to continue his contribution to the conversation. Brian, before we start, I want you to know that there were a lot of, I'll say, comments sent my way after last week's show, and many of them talked about how good and how brilliant you are. I replied, of course, by saying, okay, he's okay, no big deal, but yeah, he didn't do bad. We, you know, he's got a long way to go, but anyway. Brian, I'm joking, of course. You were very, very outstanding. You know I couldn't let that go. Come on. You open the door, you know I'm going to come through it. So, but anyway, we had a lot of responses to last week's show. And I posted something like 2 or 3 o'clock this morning just before I went to bed about it was called Teachers Unions. Smarting after yes. many members vote for Trump, and I sent you something on that too.
So yes, I read it.
That feeds right into what we talked about last week and what we're going to talk about this week. So let's get started. Let's try and pick up where we left off last week. You had the floor, so let's sure. go with you starting.
Okay, well, we can begin.
Brian, let me. I didn't do another formal introduction because, again, many of the people who listen, last week indicated they were going to be here this week. And for those of you who weren't here last week, this is Brian Crowell. He's a teacher of 14, 15, 16 years, a union member. I think you're a union shop leader. And he's a teacher that has been marked for destruction by school board and on and on, who has sure. waged an incredible fight back. Has done some incredible things in terms of fighting back. He has been a very strong supporter of the unions, as myself, and he has done a lot to help people deal with the situation they find themselves in as relates to the war on public education, teachers, teacher professions, and unions, etc. And he is a graduate student, and he's finished up his master's, got a couple credentials, but more importantly for me, he is going to go on for his doctorate, and I am so pleased to hear that. I mean, I knew that for some time, but to announce that. With that, here's Brian. Welcome back, Brian.
How you doing, Dr. Miller? I guess we can pick up definitely where we left off the article I read last week talking about union members voting for Trump. I know a specific union member in Southern California, teacher, who was thrown into literally a rubber room, thrown into a remediation program, written up with charges, sent to the Commission on Professional Competence hearing, and she won her trial, and the panel deemed that she did not deserve to be terminated, that she, in fact, deserves to have her job. She's been on leave for 26 months. And she's one of the teachers that felt abandoned by her union, California Teachers Association, which is under NEA, and she voted for Trump. And I know dozens of teachers, particularly the teachers under attack, okay, who voted for Trump. Not that they believe that Trump is going to make their situation any better, but more of a protest vote, if you will. And that's what we talked about last week with the unions abandoning their principles, you get a weakening and decay of the unions themselves, and that's what we're seeing. I would say probably more teachers than want to admit, particularly when you start talking about trade policy, NAFTA, which Hillary Clinton was dead on arrival on, doesn't surprise me at all. And frankly, I think that's going to continue until the unions, particularly the teachers' unions, come to grips with what they stand for, if anything.
Well, what you just said, you were talking about unions almost in general, as well as including in there teachers' union, as it relates to having capitulated. I think, as I mentioned last week, the capitulation started in the 1980s when Reagan took office, and one of the things that he had promised in his plank was destruction of the union. And one of the first things he did within X number of days in office, the Air Controllers Union gave him the great opportunity when they went on strike, and he promptly fired all of them, thousands of them, putting the nation at risk in terms of bringing people into control towers that had probably minimal experience doing it. But his point was, I promised to destroy unions. I just fired thousands of them. And that sent shockwaves, I mean, incredible tsunami-type shockwaves through the union community. Unions of all stripes in all areas of employment, what have you, were frightened to death, basically, about what had happened. And that started the capitulation. That started turning their back on the 30 years before that, when even going back to the 1940s, 1950s, when the unions took to the street and faced violent action against them by police, by soldiers, by hired private thugs, and some went to the point where some were beaten, shot, killed, whole nine yards, but they prevailed and started making tremendous progress, I should say, towards bringing the working class up the economic ladder and the social status ladder to the point where there was a huge influx of working class people into the middle class during the 50s and the 60s, continuing into the 70s. That's the background information that I think you were speaking to.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, did you touch on the GM strike of 36?
Not specifically, but you want to go there?
Okay. Yeah, the General Motors strike of 1936 in Michigan was the first time a president actually sent federal troops to protect the strikers from management. That was the first time the federal government took the side of the strikers. And then later, as you know, we got A. Philip Randolph with the Pullman Porters. And that's actually led to the rise of unions in the labor movement and labor sharing a greater percentage of the productivity. I want to say something specific for the teachers in the audience to understand, because I think there's a misconception about labor unions. Labor unions are not asking for handouts. They're not asking to get something they didn't earn. Labor unions are asking for a larger percentage of what's produced, a larger percentage of productive power. That's what they're asking for. If you look at the productivity of labor in America since the 70s, productivity in America has gone up 45%. So as we know, teachers are working much harder, and they're much more productive than they used to be. Okay? And frankly, I don't know any teacher that's gotten a 45% raise increase since 1976. Do you? So I think this right-wing kind of neoconservative narrative that somehow labor unions want something they didn't earn, I think teachers need to object to that in a real tangible way. There's another narrative that we hear about. For example, Social Security, this narrative that, you know, you're giving people handouts. Well, Social Security was deferred income that you paid into for 30 or 40 years, that finally you're going to get in your older age. You paid for it through payroll taxes and other taxes for a very long time, but the narrative is, again, that somehow you're getting something you didn't earn. And frankly, unfortunately, I don't hear it argued in that way to be effective in cutting across the nonsense, which frankly is going to lead us into Secretary-elect DeVos. Did you want to start on that, or did you want me to start on Mrs. DeVos?
Let's finish with the idea that how the unions, and specifically the teachers' union,
sure,
over, I say, the last 20 years or so, mm-hmm, have either contributed to the situation that teachers' union find themselves in today, as mm-hmm well as to the harm that teachers' unions have done. I mean, so I'm talking about national. When I say teachers' union people, remember, yeah, I'm a unionist going back to when I was born, sort of thing. Oh, and by the mm-hmm way, Brian, you asked me, did I know about the GM, the president protecting back in the 1930s? I wasn't born then, so let's keep that real, okay? That was. I knew you were doing that to me, but let's keep that to my. Keep it real. But anyway, the capitulation is one of the things that we talked about last week, and sure, how unions have capitulated, and I mentioned a few minutes ago. But specifically, the teachers' union. Remember how the teachers' union really started and got it some traction? And remember who started, who pushed the teachers' union movement here in New York?
Yeah,
you know what I'm talking about?
The gentleman's name.
Al Shanker.
Al Shanker is a very hot topic in teachers' history, depending on what side you're on. But that was the big fight over community schools. That's what, as you know, what I'm talking about.
Yes, exactly.
Albert Shanker's plan or ideology was this weird kind of labor management collaboration. That was Albert Shanker's baby. In other words, the goals and wishes of labor and management always align. And so, therefore, we should be working as partners with management on any given issue, even if it goes against the interests of the students and the teachers as a whole. And frankly, that to me was the beginning of the end of the AFT union. We fast forward to Randy Weingarten, her comments just recently. I think she was on CNN just recently talking about the new Secretary of Education. She had a little
designee.
Yeah, a little press release that she put out. Nowhere in the press release did she say anything political. In other words, she didn't say, we're going to mobilize the Senate to filibuster you. She didn't say that. She didn't say, we're going to mobilize the current and retired teachers to stop all of your initiatives. She didn't say that Trump's nomination of DeVos was a declaration of war against public education, which it obviously is. Notice anything that would have been tangible, she didn't say. So she's already signaling that she's not going to oppose DeVos in any way, shape, or form that matters. Her thing is to get in the room with DeVos, as she got in the room with Duncan, and say, you know, how can we get the crumbs off the table, under the table, literally, and I will help you beat the teachers into a pulp. That is what she's going to do. I guarantee it.
Which is consistent with the theme of the last week's show and this week's show in terms of how unions, union leadership, and that's what I want to say again. We're talking union leadership.
Yes.
At the national level, mostly, and how it may filter down to states and then district level.
Yes.
Not necessarily membership.
No.
However, as we have seen, how membership has responded to or reacted to national leadership as relates to this past election. And for all of us who are on Facebook, I know you have seen it. teachers. Many of them are not saying, I voted for Trump, but they do say something like, Hillary got what she deserved, da-da-da-da-da-da, which is a backhanded yes. compliment. Few teachers who would say, I voted for Trump. I didn't like Trump, but I disliked Clinton more.
Yes.
And I'm hoping that Trump won't be as devastating to us as Obama and Clinton and yes. Trump. I mean, Clinton, too, had she been elected. So there is, I believe, the perception among the membership that the leadership has failed them.
Yes, absolutely. Well, yeah, because when Randy Weingarten was called out for endorsing Clinton because Sanders was polling better against Trump, she immediately got defensive. She said Bernie Sanders wasn't vetted. As you know, Bernie Sanders is 70-something years old. He's been in the Senate forever, one of the most public figures. Nobody is more vetted than Bernie Sanders. But notice how defensive she got immediately. And again, the issue is there aren't any consequences in the union leadership for failure. This is the bottom line. You know, there's supposed to be a reward or consequence for political action or inaction. That's just kind of the way of the universe in my view. But for the union leadership, losing members in every state over time, as we went through last week, income for teachers going down, health care getting worse, working conditions for teachers getting bullied. But at the same time, they want to continue to take your money. And so basically the leadership has lost any connection to the members. And then that's what is driving this downward spiral that we're seeing, downward, 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 to a point where literally the unions don't even have anything in common with their members. And so when people, unfortunately, teachers got what I believe was called a horrified response. Oh, my Lord, this person is so terrible. Well, elections have consequences. So they say to the victor, go to spoil. What do you think Trump's going to do? He's going to take his chainsaw and run the teachers over if he can, and he's daring the teachers to stop him. We're not going to get a slow drip, 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 which is more the Obama, Arnie Duncan style. Or to me, you have basically similar philosophies of the end result. One is a slow kind of neoliberal, mad capital decay of standard of living. And the other one is a fast neoconservative mad capital delay of standard of living. They're both the same. But I think for the teachers to be re-engaged, because I say re-engage, as you know, a lot of people aren't going into the profession. See, the capitulation of the union leadership has led to people not wanting to go into the profession at all. You have shortage in California, shortage in Florida. You can't find substitute teachers. There's not enough speech psychologists. There's not enough bilingual teachers. There's not enough counselors. You have a shortage. Okay, and what that means is you have a profession that people no longer want to be a part of. To me, that's the biggest damage of the capitulation of union leadership. Because less teachers coming in, that's less money the union received. And I think you're following what I'm saying.
Yes, I'm not saying anything until you finish.
You have to forgive me. It's very quiet on your end, so I don't know when I pause. I'm actually pausing to make sure you're still there. Yeah. But no, I think that going forward, and I don't want to spend your whole show talking about, all is lost. Going forward, on a positive note, there are things teachers can do in their school sites to make them more aware, more active. Most school sites have a school site council or a school governance council, okay? A lot of school districts still do the money and the budget based on the school site itself. There's a governing body of teachers and parents and administrators and employees, and they can vote for the policies that are in their interest. Teachers can no longer close their door and pray and hope everything's going to be okay. Those days are long gone. Teachers are going to have to be obviously active in front of their students, but increasingly more active outside the classroom. And I think that is where we can have fertile ground.
What I want to say now that I didn't say last week, in the title that we put forth in terms of consciousness, teachers and their consciousness, I started to insert the word critical consciousness, but I didn't. And now I will, because I think it's really timely and appropriate at this point. What you and I have been talking about prior to last week's show and then during the show and then afterwards show, we both are saying that teachers must become more engaged in this war. And they must do so, if necessary, outside of the confines of their union.
Yes.
They can no longer stand back and rely on the union or party identification to lead them and, quote, protect them, defend them in this war. Instead, teachers, and then this is something, Brian, I have been preaching on the show, and I said use the word preaching because basically I like that over ranting.
Sure.
From day one, that teachers have to become more engaged in the war, both as teachers, as private citizens, as members of the community, as parents, practicing and participating in democracy, and they haven't. Even with the onslaught of things that have happened, teachers, the vast majority of them, and this is my view, not anyone else's, I stand on this, have not been engaged.
Yeah, well,
you can put on, you know, Facebook. Well, let me finish.
Oh, go ahead.
You can get on Facebook. You can join groups. You can start your own groups. You can do all those things. That's a form of engagement, yes. But the type of engagement that is needed and was needed years ago when this onslaught started was teachers having a critical consciousness. And critical, by that I mean going back to sociologists, psychologists, political scientists of the 1930s, the German school, and before them, Marx, and before them, after Marx, many of the German philosophers, and this whole notion of political economy. Those scholars back then, they talked about everyone needing to be aware of the social cultural context in which things were happening, and that they needed this consciousness to make them aware of how the social cultural structure itself influence the way they think, influence the way they feel, influence the way they see things, and that many, many times the social structure itself is built to continue its existence in perpetuity, and that the social structure itself becomes a form of dominance, and that until people develop a critical awareness of their social structure and the culture which that structure has built and is now trying to perpetuate, they will always be under the influence of that dominance. Teachers, bringing this back to teachers, yeah, teachers can be aware of what's happening to them in their schools, their profession, et cetera. But until they can connect what's happening to them individually to the bigger picture in terms of the culture, the social structure, and the fact that the school itself is a social institution that's built and maintained to perpetuate the status quo.
Yes.
That's what I'm talking about in terms of a critical awareness. We in terms of the majority of the teachers, and again, this is my argument, don't have that critical consciousness. And until we get the critical consciousness, we're not going to be the kind of leaders that teachers can be, should be, and the kind of leaders that you were thinking of when we developed the show, when you said consciousness and leadership, and tagged that to teachers.
Right. I mean, something. I wanted to make sure you finished your thought before I jumped in.
I'm done.
Oh, okay. One thing that I wanted to give you a practical example. You're talking about consciousness. We're talking about socially aware. But there's something, like you talk about the social structure. Notice one thing, talking about the leadership of the teachers' unions. Where I'm in here in Berkeley, zero teachers on the school board. Why aren't the unions running their retired teachers to take over all these school boards? And in turn, to take over the county boards of supervisors. Why aren't teachers politically aware, astute, and in positions of power that affect public education? Notice the unions have done nothing to take over these school boards that are passing Common Core, that are passing draconian rules and laws and statutes against teachers in their localities. Teachers, you know, a lot of retired teachers in their early 60s, still very spry, still very active, would probably love to serve on the school board and learn the inner workings. But again, there is a big brain trust, I think, that the union leadership is just not tapped into. Teachers don't sit a lot of times on state boards of education. You have usually more lawyers than teachers on a state board of education. You follow where I'm going. So this, not only the social structure, but the governmental structure. Teachers are going to have to get involved if they want to see public education survive.
Well, I will take exception to some of what you said in that, again, you know, I traveled on my three road trips and my fourth one being here now back in Buffalo for a extended time. But I found there were teachers who would run for school board election. In fact, here in Buffalo, I met a lot of people who would run and did run for school board.
Okay.
And the local union, at least here, and I think in many communities that I've visited, the local, maybe not this, the national, the local did support teachers and even parents. And elderly, youth, what have you, who were sympathetic to public education, they supported them. They even looked for them to encourage them to run and would financially support them.
I'm speaking specifically as a national policy.
Okay, back. That's where I wanted to go. Make sure you're talking still about national policy, because there were many exceptions to what we saw from the national at the local city or district level.
Yes. Specifically, because the reason I'm speaking nationally and macro United States so much, because I consider this situation a national emergency. And so therefore we need national leadership as well. Obviously, in a lot of ways, as I see, and I've been to state union conventions, in a lot of ways the localities and states are a lot more progressive than the national leadership. I've seen many examples of that. So I do think on a certain level, the states and localities, and of course, you know, I'm speaking, there's some diamonds in the rough. You're obviously up there in Buffalo. That's obviously a brighter spot. You've got really good things happening in Broward County, Florida. I guess it just depends on where you are. But I think the role of the National Union and its leadership in getting your marching orders from them, I think that's kind of what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
If Randy Weingarten doesn't like what you've done, then you find yourself out of a job, out of your leadership like Steve Kahn in Detroit. You'll find yourself out of the leadership like Diana Moore in Orange County, Florida. You follow what I'm getting at. If you do something progressive, Randy Weingarten has shown, we're going to get you out of this position because you're too progressive. That's what I'm talking about. And I don't see any indication. So, for example, if you protest against Secretary Devils-Elect too vigorously to her policies, okay, I'm going to make sure that you are dealt with. That's kind of what I'm talking about specifically.
Well, and we have to, of course, differentiate when we're making our broad statements.
Sure.
I think that's critical because let's take this back to what happened today, this morning, from the post that I sent you earlier and then I put on Facebook, and we're back to the election, which is still very much on everyone's mind still, and the fact that teachers now are saying, yes, I voted for Trump, my vote for Trump was a vote against Hillary. My vote against Hillary was also maybe my vote against the union because didn't like the way in which they did the early endorsement of Hillary. And there was a top-down thing as opposed to having input from the membership and on and on and on. So that we're basically talking about, again, two phenomena here maybe, and that is, on the one hand, this whole show came about as a result of Trump being elected to be the president of the United States.
Sure.
And the rampant fear that has gone through both the general population, except for the 60-some-odd million people who voted for Trump, and specifically unions, more specifically teachers' union and teachers. And what we initially started out talking about is basically how did this happen?
Yes.
And another instance of how the vaunted unions of the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s have failed the 80s, the 90s, the 2000, now the 2010.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Both its membership, but also the larger, once thriving, up and coming middle class.
Yes.
And that has to be recognized and understood, and that's the big picture. And then we're giving examples of how the union has failed the middle class, how the union's capitulation, and if they call it compromising politics, has contributed to the downfall of the middle class, the downfall of public education, the downfall of unionism as itself, and how Trump, and we bring it to Trump's win, which is now being contested, Trump's win is possibly the fait accompli of the last 30, 40 years that started with Reagan.
Yes.
To be the death toll to the middle class, death toll to public everything, the privatization of everything that I always talk about. When I say everything, that's mm-hmm. everyone and everything, humanity and planet, and that includes the union, et cetera. This is what we've been talking about. And your message and the title that we came up with was teachers need this consciousness, and they need to become leaders with this consciousness.
Well, as I said in the introduction in your first show, I was just running down a lot of raw macroeconomic data. Like I said, the last time it's been such a disparity in income, size, and middle class was under Hoover in 1931. This was the last time all the metrics that you're talking about, the middle class, health middle class, top 1% income, last time it was this bad was 1931. So, yes, I totally agree. This is the unwinding of FDR's New Deal. This is the unwinding of the Great Society programs with LBJ. So I do agree in a lot of sense. This is kind of the end result of the capitulation. But teachers have a unique power that I think they can tap into. Teachers can influence over their career thousands of students with their worldview. Teachers are lovers of justice, generally speaking, fairness, generally speaking, lovers of the environment. They care about making civic-minded citizens. Teachers understand the importance of an educated population. There's a specific something special that teachers have, okay? In the same breath, that's why teachers are so targeted. And I think that's what I want to say, their inner power is teachers really need to discover their inner power and understand that there is a political aspect why teachers are on such a microscope right now.
You're echoing what I've been saying for almost 3 years. And I use the term that I grew up with and have always had the image of teachers as the salt of the earth. People who have been with me from the beginning, you know, I've said that over and over and over again. Even in the face of having experienced teachers who are not the salt of the earth, teachers who were biased, racist, sexist, what have you, I still have maintained this notion, the romanticized notion, if you want to call it that, that teachers in the main are the salt of the earth. And all the things that you just said is part of that romanticized vision that I've carried about teachers forever. And then to say that there is lacking, oh, and something else too that I've always said, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. it was a post not too long ago, a few hours ago, where a teacher was saying, basically, I want to just go in my classroom and just let me teach.
Yes.
There's a radio show that has that as its title. And I have said over and over again, those days are gone.
Mm-hmm.
They've been gone. And mm-hmm. they're not coming back. That teachers have to be aware of not only who they are and what they bring, but they need to be aware of what their school, the rest of the teachers, the administration, they need to be aware of the community in which they're teaching. They need to be aware of the city, state, county, and the country. That's part of this consciousness that is part of our title. And I don't see that in terms of that bigger, broader consciousness. I'll say something that I, again, started to say last time that I haven't said. For about a year and a half, I've been working on a series that I want to do, maybe sometime soon. And it's called The Teachers as Leader. That's why I like the title that we came up with for this series. And in that series that I'm working on, I kind of talk about some of the things that we talked about just in the last 5 minutes here in terms of what I see our teachers are going to have to become who are already teachers, and new teachers, the few that are coming into the profession,
mm-hmm.
and who will stay, what they must become in order for the teaching profession itself to survive. Mm-hmm. And in survival, or our survival, will contribute to public education survival. They're tied together. And some of the things that you just said is part of the argument that I'm going to put forth when I do the series on the teacher as leader. But in my title would be the teachers as critical conscious leaders, and more in depth in terms of what I'm talking about in terms of what critical means as relates to the subject matter of teachers as leaders. So we're on the same page in that regard. As we are now heading towards the last 10 minutes or 12 minutes or so, there are some other things that you wanted to specifically get to that we didn't get to last week.
Yeah,
remember
two
those
things.
And let's get to them right now.
I do. The one we want to get deeper into the racketeering scheme by the law firms that the school districts retain for litigation and discipline. I think teachers need to understand the business, you know, kind of microeconomic reality. School districts have assets, okay? They have buildings, they have facilities that were built by Roosevelt, you know, 60, 70 years ago. If you are a law firm, okay, and you're looking for business, you're soliciting business, there is no more, you're going to find more business than you want with teachers in public education. So teachers need to understand there is a marketing monopoly system where law firms have enriched themselves through rubber rooms, through teacher jails, attacking innocent teachers who are oftentimes whistleblowers, and lawyers have done illegal and unlawful acts to make this happen. So teachers need to understand that public education is a lot of money for the private sector, and they've been wanting it for quite some time. I think your listeners really need to understand why all this is occurring. It's to enrich another group of people, and we're just really starting to tap into this here in California. Another thing teachers need to understand is when you're talking about the predations of mad capital, you know, if you are a developer like Donald Trump, okay, real estate developer, of course you want to buy up school district property, sell it off dirt cheap, build something else to replace it. Obviously, you see all of this untapped property for your real estate adventure. So it's no accident why this is happening. I think teachers need to follow the money and understand there's a political element to the money. I think teachers, generally speaking, think that, you know, that teaching is primarily about education.
Brian, let me stop you. We have a caller, and I would like to bring that caller in. Hello,
sure.
Caller. Are you still there?
I am.
Hi. Welcome to the War Report. And you are?
Carol.
Okay. You have a question or a comment?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. I thought you were calling because you had a question or comment about what we've been talking about. You just want to be part of the conversation? Hello? Hello? Well, I guess not. Brian, back to you.
Well, yeah, I really want teachers to understand. It's interesting. I don't see an attack on the firefighters as I do with public education. I don't see an attack on police department as I do in public education. I do think there's a kind of a sexism thing going on. Most teachers are female, which is why I think they're targeted for bullying. But I think teachers, particularly new teachers, if they're going to go into the profession, they need to just be aware of some of the pitfalls and things they could come up with. But I definitely wanted to make sure the audience understands this.
And what was the second thing that you wanted to make sure we got to?
Well, I covered two really quickly. So, I guess I can move on to the third. This is what I don't want. I don't want teachers and people in public education to become jaded and demoralized. I think that oftentimes teachers are bombarded with all their day-to-day responsibilities, that they become jaded, and a jaded teacher tends to lose sight of their students and their passion for the job. I really want to tell teachers, teaching is still one of the best jobs in the world, if not the best job in the world. But I want teachers to actually take this knowledge, acquire their new knowledge, apply it not only in the classroom, but apply it outside the classroom. I think the enemies of public education are counting on teachers becoming jaded. And as long as teachers do not become jaded, I think we'll be successful.
Okay. Were you directing that to me?
I was directing that generally speaking. I say that because, as you know, most of the teachers I talk to are teachers who are being attacked, threatened with termination, threatened with discipline, have multitudes of health problems. I talk to the teachers on that side of the fence who have been disconnected from their students. And one common theme in all these teachers I talk to, all they want is to go back in the classroom with their students and teach. The most heartbreaking thing they describe to me is, I miss my students. And this outside entity of politics and legality and lawyers has taken me away from what I really want to do for other reasons. And that's what I'm saying. Even I talk to teachers in the hospital who cannot even drive their car home. They're going through, you know, deep depression. I've talked to teachers in many different physical states. But one thing they all have in common is they all love their students. And it's a big strength, but in the wrong hands, it could also be the biggest weakness. And that's what I'm talking about, not becoming jaded.
And I would add to that, yes, most of the teachers that I have come in contact with, especially over this last year, they do have that one thing, two things in common. They love their students.
Mm-hmm.
They miss their students when they can't be with their students, and they are fearful of what they're doing and what they're being forced to do is harming their students.
Mm-hmm.
And they're helpless and being able to resist, and they are really, really bothered by their role that they're playing and the damage that they're doing to their students. And
yes.
That, when you, and again, I know what the work that you've been doing over the last few years, working with teachers across the country, and that's the one thing that, in terms of, back to our topic, in terms of the critical consciousness, teachers have to realize not only what's happening to them, they know that, but why and how. And that can become part of them developing that critical consciousness, and that they understand the why, which is the most important component, as far as I'm concerned. The why is always the most important, I think, and the how, then they would be more capable of becoming those critical conscious leaders that we're talking
mm-hmm.
about.
Mm-hmm.
I have one little note. The caller that called in, she sent me a message
yes.
saying that she called the wrong number. She wanted to call the listen in number.
Okay.
And she got the call in and talk number. And so
okay.
It's okay, caller. I understand.
Got it.
We got about 3 minutes left. Let me say a few things.
Sure.
I also posted some things today about what is happening at the university level. Remember, that's my home. And
yes.
teachers who have said things in their classrooms, and those things have been jumped on by students who take it to, I guess, the chairman of the department, deans, president, and et cetera. And teachers, some of them have been removed from the class. This is at the university level now. Removed from the classroom. Some have been censured. And I then today uploaded several more stories about university teachers who are speaking out in their classroom, even if the subject of their speaking out is related to what they're teaching, are now under attack big time, big time. And so that this is part of that consciousness that we're seeing, but I also what I want to bring everyone's attention to is, I think it was last week, a new group formed, Professor Watch, something like that, where they are going to ask students all across the country to report on their professors who are anti-Trump, who are anti-conservatism, who are anti-Republicans. They want to identify these people. They want to get them out of the classroom. They want to get them out of the universities, and that this is a civic responsibility, a civic duty, and that there's a lot of money behind this group. They're taking it to the university like they have already taken it to K through 12. We talked minimally, I did last week or week before, about the teacher there in Northern California who was trying to compare the rise of Trump to the rise of Hitler.
That's right.
Student went home, told his mother. Mother came, talked to the principal. That teacher was yanked out of the classroom. The update on it is that the teacher is now back in the classroom, but the teacher's going to retire after 40-some years of teaching.
That's right.
This is part of that critical awareness and leadership that we've been talking about. We're out of time, but I may do a show on that, and it's also and we've seen it.
I want to get to some cases here where they're also starting to attack the students who exercise their free speech rights at board meetings. We can talk about that at a later show, but I've also seen tangible acts where they're now attacking the students themselves.
I got 30 seconds or so, but anyway. It's part of the big picture, what we were just talking about in terms of the effort to silence those people who have critical consciousness, who are leaders or would-be leaders. And as you said, Brian, teachers, my salt-of-the-earth people, are in the most critical role for bringing about awareness, bringing about change, and we are the most threatening group, individually and collectively, against the powers that be, the 1%, the neolibs, whoever you want to call them, there is, because of our position and because of the long-term influence that we can have on our students from pre-K to 12 on into college. We can be the ones who change students' minds. We're the ones who can make students aware. We can make students more democratic, and we can make students also more conservative. We can do a lot, and if we have that critical consciousness, we can do some things that will help save public education, but also save democracy as we talk about it, not as we practice. With that, folks, I have to yield. Brian, maybe you and I will come back at a little later date. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks, BBS, for letting me have the extra minute. Thank you. Have a good day, people.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.